infinite life. Live for tomorrow.
Hey everybody, it's Mike Jeff for Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the feature interview. It is a pleasure. We've got Alyssa Allgood here for this month's feature interview, who has been touring the world, literally touring the world, so we're going to talk all about that. She has a whole ton of stuff coming up, plus she has shows coming up, including one very special show coming up in May at the Studebaker Theater with the Chicago Jazz Orchestra and John Faddis, which is going to be incredible. But you also came back into town from touring. I think you were in Shanghai.
I was. Mm-hmm.
And now you have a brand new teaching gig, which we should talk about right off the top of the show, since this is kind of our summer jazz camp educational issue for March. And so you are at the Chicago Academy for the Arts, and your official title is Jazz Vocal Instructor.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of right up your alley,
it
right?
It is, absolutely.
So how did this come about? I mean, that's an incredible school.
Absolutely. I'm very honored to be there, and it's certainly exciting to get to come back from this really life-changing experience of getting to go abroad for a few weeks and be performing, and then come back and start a position, which is teaching exactly what I do every day. So that's very, really exciting. So I had heard about the position. I actually did a little bit of work with the school and some other like Saturday programs and doing some subbing as well. I knew that they had an opening, so I'd applied for it. Kind of one of those things where you're not really sure how you're going to make it work if you get it, but it's just the most perfect position, so I just wanted to at least kind of go for it. And I interviewed for the position actually while I was abroad and then came back and started right away. And I'm really, really excited to be there. I'm still kind of getting my bearings. I've only been there for a few weeks. But what I'm doing there is teaching private lessons to all of the voice students. So the students have to take both a classical and a jazz voice lesson, which I think is really, really smart of the school to do that, because it's allowing them to become very versatile in what they're learning and develop different skill sets and different styles, I think, that make them very kind of above other students, you know, learning different things. And I'm also twice a week teaching a jazz vocal workshop, which in the past has been kind of run as like a studio class, but I'm using it as an opportunity to teach the students about improvisation, expose them to different singers. We're doing a lot of listening and analyzing recordings. Our first class, we learned All of Me, one of the great standards, and we listened to three different versions. We listened to Sarah Vaughan, Dinah Washington, and Billie Holiday, which are three of my favorite singers, also very different singers. Mm-hmm. So kind of talking with the students about what different things were they hearing stylistically and tone and phrasing and why does that matter. And it was really, really exciting to see their kind of eyes light up. So I'm very, very, very excited to be there teaching them as much as I can now that I'm there.
Yeah. Well, so let's back up a little bit,
sure,
because I think you said something interesting, and I'm curious if this is how you learned how to become a vocalist, classical and jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Did you learn that way? Did you learn the classical side? You probably learned classical first, right? Is that like choral, or is that classical, operatic?
So I was involved with like the traditional choral program like all throughout like junior high and high school. So you're certainly getting kind of more like classical voice techniques. And then when I was did my undergrad, I was on a voice scholarship, so I also had to take classical lessons. So I studied classical lessons all 4 years of my undergrad and did a junior recital and all those things.
Explain to me, because you know I'm just a drummer with a TV show here, so I need some help here.
Sure.
So like a classical wise, I mean, you know, when you're in, you know, I mean, I think about it like the school choir, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're in eighth grade, so that's considered classical, or is that choral, or is that classical?
Because
I mean, classical to me is like operatic.
Yeah,
right?
I would agree with that. Like classical, I would more kind of consider that like operas and arias and things like that.
Yeah.
Which you can maybe have some of that repertoire in a choral setting, but the choral is more, I would say, just like traditional kind of vocal technique, where maybe it's not quite as nuanced as like an opera, but it's still more of dealing with, you know, breath control and vowels and all those things, which of course you use in jazz, but it's a different kind of sound.
And you're also developing your ear, right?
Because
you're mm-hmm. you're learning how to sing in harmony with your
absolutely.
Section.
Mm-hmm.
See, I knew something about all this stuff. So that's what that is.
Right.
But then when you get into college, then you probably really expanded,
mm-hmm.
and that's more like technical wise. Do you feel like that's where you really develop your voice from a technique standpoint, and then you can use it in jazz? I mean, I would imagine it's hard to go from classical to jazz, though, because you're singing it completely different, phrasing-wise and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the technique, is it fairly the same?
I think it is exactly the same, yeah. actually. And I think that's one thing that having now coming into the academy where I'm working with a lot of students who are maybe hoping to be a professional opera singer one day, is then working with them on how to have the same technique but just manipulate that technique to change their sound. So we're still dealing with, you know, breath support and control. We're still dealing with vowels and placement of the sound, just as you were doing if you were singing, you know, an opera piece. But the way that you're placing that sound, or how large your vowel is, or how spread your vowel is very different in jazz. So it's more about having that good foundation, and then just manipulating it so you can get different sounds. And I think for me, I had studied jazz first, and then when I did my undergrad, I did classical lessons, and it was really amazing for me because I realized, oh my gosh, I have access to like this kind of different range and a different sound that I didn't realize that I had that. And I can still very much hear that now, especially when I'm improvising, feeling like I can, you know, not be afraid to go for higher notes or lower notes, and kind of really just being aware of like what my instrument is. And you can listen to people like, you know, Sarah Vaughan is a really great example of somebody who had a very kind of classical sound in some ways with her very big vibrato, but she was such a master at, I think, knowing what her instrument was and being able to manipulate it. And she could, in one phrase, you know, sing 2.5 octaves, and you're kind of like, well, thanks for setting the bar so high for us, Sarah. So I think it's definitely important to have that foundation, but I really am kind of approaching it that the technique is really the same across any genre, and then it's just kind of how you again manipulate it and are focusing and trying to direct that sound.
Well, it's interesting because you kind of went jazz and then classical, which actually, when you really think about it, it's probably easier because I know there's a lot of classical vocalists that just they cannot get the phrasing happening because they played. Have done the classical thing for so long, it's just so difficult. But you actually started jazz, so you had phrasing, or at least you were the beginnings of the phrasing, not the phrasing you have now, obviously, but the phrasing. And then you went into the technical aspect. Now, when you're teaching students, how do you approach that? You're just doing jazz, right? So, I mean, if you're teaching students no matter what age, let's say you have a beginner who's like in seventh grade and they want to learn jazz or something. I mean, how do you even start? Like, what's... They don't know about breathing. They don't know about diaphragm control. They don't know about any of that stuff. You obviously have to focus a little bit on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think that the beginning of my lesson still is very, like, traditional, and that I'm still working with the students about, breathing. And a lot of times if you're working with younger singers, you were mentioning, like, seventh grade, they might, their voices maybe not have, like, changed yet. So they might be dealing with kind of breaks in their register and things like that. So kind of dealing with that technical thing first in, like, a warm-up setting, and then going into the repertoire where you're certainly going to be exploring different parts of your range, and you're going to have to be singing 2 or 4 bar phrases. So you're going to have to learn how to breathe and sustain that sound. So it's all, again, what I'm saying, it's the same technique. I think it's really important for that. And then in terms of repertoire, it's like finding material that I think is appropriate for that age. So something like, you know, like a Bye Bye Blackbird, I think is a really great start, or All of Me. And then kind of dealing with what I've sort of created is, here's the original melody. I created the lead sheet just very kind of straight that we would find like in the real book. And then I'll have another version where maybe the rhythms are syncopated and things like that. And I kind of work with them on trying to understand who, when we accent certain things around the offbeats, and kind of talk with them a little bit about swing rhythms.
Yeah.
And even I think at that age, it's important to kind of start exposing them to that kind of those concepts.
Well, they have to have fun. You're obviously not starting them off on Lush Life.
Right.
That'd be like, just analyzing the lyrics would be a problem with that
absolutely.
One. So, although that's interesting, though, because they probably catch on really quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, you coming up, when did you start vocalizing? I know we talked a little bit when you were talking about the education standpoint, but I mean, was there jazz? Was there music around in the house when you were growing up?
Yeah.
I mean, how did you want to sing instead of taking up another instrument?
Both my parents are fans of jazz and blues music. It wasn't necessarily something where I'd like come home and there'd be records playing all the time. It wasn't like that kind of like, you know, image of what people have. But we certainly, like I said, they love jazz and blues music. I mean, I saw Kurt Elling when I was a kid here in Chicago. And I really have been singing since I was a young kid. I think I had my first solo when I was in second grade with the big fifth graders. Oh, yeah? So it was kind of like destined for stardom right there in that moment. You know, I sang the song.
Singing with the varsity team.
Yeah, exactly. It was about it being eco-friendly and about walking instead of driving. I could probably sing it. I'm not going to, but, you know, that'll be the next interview.
We'll have you come back.
Yes. So I just, you know, was involved with music. I think the school I went to growing up had a really great program. So I started singing, you know, with the jazz band actually when I was in sixth grade.
Oh, wow.
So there's also some pretty great recordings of me singing Satin Doll as like a
Well, it's pretty impressive that a jazz band in sixth grade
yeah.
had a vocalist.
Yeah,
I absolutely. Mean, how many jazz bands in sixth grade have vocalists? Right. I don't know many.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel very grateful for like having those kind of experiences. And then shortly after that, I got connected with Janice Borla, and I started attending her summer camp.
Oh, she used to do that summer jazz
yeah.
camp all the time. Yeah.
Yeah,
that,
so the first time I went there was actually when I was 12.
Wow.
And so I ended up going back every summer. And so those kind of experiences, and I, you know, I sang in musicals, I did jazz choir and plays and all kinds of stuff, and just really trying to get as many kinds of experiences as I could.
So are you learning tunes then? I mean, once you get to Janice's camp, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's like an emphasis on learning tunes, how to do that. But like leading into that, before you even got into that, were you like learning tunes? I mean, like...
I don't think so quite as much. I mean, I certainly was learning whatever, like, the jazz band was singing, and then and just in some of the lessons, and we started going through, like, repertoire, but also you know, paying attention to technique, as I was talking about, and
yeah.
learning a little bit about different singers to listen to and things like that. But I don't think, like, at that age, I was like, okay, I'm going to get my gig book ready, and these are all the tunes I was going to learn.
10 tunes
yeah,
a week.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be in a different place if I was doing it. I did that when I was 12. But certainly just trying to get experience yeah, just learning the material that whatever was kind of being assigned to me at that time.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because, you know, we talked a little bit off camera before we came on, and I mentioned, you know, from an instrumentalist standpoint, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you have to learn the technique. Then you start learning some tunes. Then you start putting the chord changes together. Then you start playing over the chord mm-hmm. changes. But with a vocalist, it's different. I mean, I would imagine it's different, but maybe it's not different. I don't know.
I think it's actually the same.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so, because you're dealing with, you know, the technique kind of things I was talking about. There's all kinds of repertoire that I think is really the same. Maybe not teaching them, like, instrumental heads, but there's also, obviously, like, great just jazz standards that we all should know. So I think that that's right there is, like, repertoire to be, like, listening for. Then it's also, dealing with improvisation. So, you know, one of the things I've been working on with the Academy is teaching them, you know, the 2-5-1 progression, and here are some things you can sing over that, and getting them to start hearing different things and just exploring improv using their voices. We started listening to Sarah Vaughan's Sassy's Blues, which is this really brilliant recording. She takes, I'm not even sure how many choruses on the blues, but each one is just the most perfect example of some concept, whether it could be like repetition or use of space, or here's a long tone where she literally sings for the entire 12 bars for one of the passes through the chorus. So
wow.
My goal is to teach them a little bit of that, so we at least learn like the head of that and talking about like what the form is. So I certainly think that the way that you teach a singer, at least the kind of general things you were mentioning, technique, repertoire, and improv, it's all the same.
Yeah. So, all right. So you end up going to Janice's camp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's how you met her, because
yep.
you went to North Central
mm-hmm.
where she teaches.
Right.
Were you a vocal major there, jazz
I was,
major?
Yes. So North Central is a liberal arts school, so you have to have like so many credits outside of your major.
Yeah.
So I actually got two majors. So I graduated with a degree in jazz studies and communication as well.
Oh, okay.
So I did
right.
a lot of writing and
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah. So you're at North Central, and you're going through everything.
Uh-huh.
How did you know, like, going into becoming a professional jazz vocalist usually isn't like, oh, yeah, well, here, now I'll just get my degree, and now
right.
I'm just going to get, and that should do it, and then
right.
I'll just start playing gigs, and
yep.
now everything will be great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how did you know that all of a sudden you could turn this into a profession?
You know, I think it... you know, when I graduated, I'm not sure that I really, like, went to that school and then came out singing, like, okay, I'm going to go do this, and this, and this is going to be my path through that. And I'm still kind of working on what I want that to be. But it's really just sort of, like, you know, graduating and then moving closer to the city and going out and meeting people. And I think that is something really wonderful about Chicago, is that it really is a great community of people here. And I felt very welcomed when I came on the scene.
Yeah.
And that I could go and... either like sit in with people or just go hang at people's gigs and ask them questions, and then kind of starting to figure out how to book gigs and just kind of, I think people are really open to answering questions and things like that. So mm-hmm. I just felt like it was, it felt, didn't feel scary to like come here to Chicago and try to start figuring things out.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit different vibe than like New York mm-hmm. when there's a, it's a whole other thing going right. on over there. But when you got out of college, you also, which I find interesting and we should talk about this, is that you did a lot of these. What are they? I don't know if they're contests. Are they considered contests?
Yeah.
I mean, for vocal contests? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Lumen Arts, but then you also went overseas, and I've got them all written down, mm-hmm. but I'd rather have you
sure.
just tell me all about
yeah.
it. But you did like a whole, like four or five or six
yeah.
of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at first, when you were doing them, you were, I think you were coming in fairly high, and then mm-hmm. you won one or won two.
Yep.
But to me, you were also exposed to like all these different musicians
Absolutely.
From all over the world
yeah.
when you did that. I mean, what were those experiences? First, what went through your mind? Why did you say, you know, because that takes a leap to say, mm-hmm. you know what, I'm going to sign up for this and see what I can do here because this is really cool. I mean, because there's not a lot of people doing that.
Right.
Like, you know, we know a lot of people in Chicago. Not a lot of people are doing that, but
mm-hmm.
you really took an initiative to do that. So talk a little bit about what your motivation was at first.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really saw those opportunities as just a way to put my name out into a bigger arena. I think a lot of those competitions also have like a monetary mm-hmm. prize associated with it, so that obviously is a nice kind of incentive to try to like go
well,
forward. And I think
a lot of those, they give you the money so that you can further your career,
right.
which is
Absolutely.
A great mission behind the
mm-hmm.
whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in particular, like the one here in Chicago with the Lumen Arts Cultural Foundation, that has been a really important relationship for me. They've helped, you know, give me some funding for various recording projects and things like that. And then getting to be a part of that improvisation-based competition as the only vocalist during that year was really,
yeah.
really important for me. And so I think each one of those competitions that I've done, I won the first Ella Fitzgerald competition that was held out in Washington, D.C. That was back in 2017. And that was a really amazing experience for me. And I think, again, even if I don't, you know, go and win the first place, it's still a really incredible experience to get 10 minutes to show an audience and to show judges, in this case, who you are and what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really the invaluable kind of takeaway from those experiences where you have to be thinking about, okay, who am I?
Right.
What do I actually have that makes me or would make me look interesting or sound interesting? How do I kind of work that up in a 10-minute presentation, kind of like an
yeah.
elevator speech, a little bit longer than an elevator speech.
Yeah.
But you have like this really kind of focused experience and opportunity to just show who you are. And I think that I've learned so much about that in kind of terms of presentation and repertoire where you get to sing two songs from
right.
this list. So it's really kind of more of like that, I think, is the invaluable experience of it. And then, of course, like getting to travel and meet other singers, meet the judges who are, you know, obviously other singers who are.
Well, tell you about who some of the judges are, because I know Al Jarreau was on one of the panels,
yeah.
right?
So, yeah. So the,
I mean, you're saying judges, but these
right,
are like
right.
judges,
yes,
man. These
yes.
are like
so
heavy
the,
duty people.
The biggest
here.
One I did was the Montreux competition based at the Montreux Jazz Fest.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't think they're still having that competition. I'm not sure, though. But that one, I was one of 10 semifinalists, so I flew out to Switzerland and performed for a panel that included some like local musicians, and then the special guest was Al Jarreau. And I was, I think, a little bit more nervous than I thought I was going to be to sing for him. And, of course, it went alphabetical, so I had to go first. I'm like, great. And I was just like, you know, he was sitting, like, you know, very close
yeah.
to where we were. And I did, one of the songs on the list was Miles Davis's Four. And I did a different set of lyrics than he'd recognize. And so just from the stage, he says, Alyssa, who wrote those lyrics? And I was just like, oh, wow, he's talking to me right now on the stage. You know, I was just not prepared for that. But that was really, really cool. And to get to meet him briefly, it wasn't really an experience where we got to, like, really spend any time with them.
Yeah.
But it was really just an honor to get to do that and
yeah.
to go, you know, across the world and go share some music. And I've become, like, Facebook friends with a lot of the singers who were in that competition and just love seeing kind of, like, what they're up to as well. And it's a whole
mm-hmm.
other kind of type of networking that you can do.
I think it's interesting because, you know, I don't know how North Central was.
Mm-hmm.
As far as who went there, you know, as far as from all over. But, like, when I went to North Texas, there was people from all over the world
right.
there, right? So you doing that when I went to a school like that, it opened my eyes like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Because then I knew, whoa, man, now I know what's going on in the rest of the world. And these guys are all my age, mm-hmm. and I need to get my act together. That's how I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Well, but with you, I don't know how North Central was, but I would imagine when you go out and do these things throughout the entire world, you run into people and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is like very good I was here because I would have never known that the level of some of these musicians that are around my age, right?
Mm-hmm.
That had to be something that probably motivated you in different ways too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so when you're doing that kind of stuff, when you come back to Chicago, is that when you recorded your first album? Is that when you came out of doing some of those? Because was that in 2016?
Yeah, so my first one, it was 2016. The one I did in, the competition I did in Switzerland was in 2015. And then I recorded my first album in 2016. And that was largely after the Lumen Arts Award, just because it helped fund a big portion of the project. But I think coming back from those experiences, like each time I feel like, just have a different perspective on music, but also really kind of performing. And again, that idea I was talking about of kind of figuring out who you are and what you're going to say to an audience. I think that's like, again, like the greatest takeaway from those experiences.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit too, because this is the other side of it, mm-hmm. right? So as a instrumentalist, you can lead your own group or you can get hired as a, you know, the side man, right? You're a vocalist. Mm-hmm. Usually you're leading your own group, running your own group. Was that something that came easy for you? I mean, because there's a whole other level of like organization, figuring out the money, booking mm-hmm. gigs, getting things together and all that. I mean, is that something that you just said, oh, okay, whatever, it wasn't a big deal? Or was there a learning curve that you had to learn? And I mean, what was like one of those first instances where you did a gig and you were like, whoa, I need to figure some of this stuff out here because this isn't as easy as I thought it was.
I don't know if I have like, I don't even remember really what my like first gig was. It was my own. But I do think all those things come really naturally to me. As I said, I also majored in communication, so I'm very much like that type of personality of trying to be organized and being very deliberate in communicating with people. I think that I'm comfortable, you know, being the front person. I think that mm-hmm. there is like a different level of expectation of what that means, you know, musically, but also kind of presentation-wise and organizational-wise and really thinking about, I think about how many charts I'm putting together and printing and taping and how many emails and stuff. It is certainly a lot of an additional work to have that kind of leadership role, but I think to me it comes naturally in terms of just putting all the pieces together.
I think it's interesting because, you know, for me working with so many different vocalists over the years, there's certain ones that you know, they walk in and no matter what gig it is,
mm-hmm.
here's the set list, here's the tunes,
here's
the order, you know, blah, blah. But they can always call an audible mm-hmm. in the middle of something
and it's
no big deal. It's like, oh yeah, don't, you know, mm-hmm. boom, 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 it's stuff like that. That obviously came naturally to you mm-hmm. because I've seen you perform, so that's how it goes. But is that a conscious thought process when you're putting together like a program? I mean, are you thinking like, I know you have some gigs coming up at Winters, like for example, right? Mm-hmm. You're playing with Paul Marinaro, March 27th to 28th
yes. mm-hmm.
at Winters. You guys mm-hmm. are doing duets. So is that something where you guys sit down and really map out? Because to me, as a vocalist, it's not, you can't just go in somewhere and just like, I don't know. What do you want to play? Oh, I don't know.
It depends, of course, what the gig is. I mean, to do like a concert setting, if you're doing something like at Winters, at, you know, at like a jazz club, it's certainly, I think there's an expectation to have a set list or at least have like a running idea.
Yeah.
I would say if it was like my own gig, I'm kind of known for like, I'll make a set list and I'll get up there. I'm like, oh, I just hate this. Who came up with this? Terrible. So I might like change things. But I do think it's important, right? Because people are coming, they're spending money to come hear you and see you. So you don't want to be like stalling in between.
Right.
So I definitely try to think about kind of the shape of a set list and also be thinking about, is there enough variety and kind of engagement for the audience as well? So Paul and I will definitely have a set list. Who knows that we'll stick to it, but we'll definitely be thinking again. And that is a kind of show where we are doing a lot of duets together, and then we're also doing a couple solo songs as well.
Okay,
so we're also
yeah.
thinking about how to break that up for the set as well.
Right. Yeah. Now, you know, some of your influences. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Sarah Vaughan, mm-hmm. Ella Fitzgerald, and things like that. So, talk a little bit about like some of your influences, maybe initially, and who are you listening to today that's inspiring?
Yeah. I think my listening has changed like dramatically since I left school and have been just doing this professionally.
Well, you kind of hunker down, right? In school, you're probably focused on like the classics and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you're learning certain things. But then as you grow as an artist, your ears open up
right.
And you probably grow as a listener too, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. So I think kind of recently, they're still kind of like classic singers, but I've gotten really, really into Abby Lincoln. I would say she's like definitely one of my favorite singers.
Yeah.
I love her phrasing and her like nuance of what she can do with her voice. I also love her original music and lyrics, which is something that I'm getting into as well. Another one who fits in that category is Betty Carter, who again is just very, to be honest, the first time I listened to her, probably when I was back in my undergrad, I didn't like get it. And I don't think I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've just been singing so much more, and I listened back, and I was like, oh, now I get it. Betty Carter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she can still be, I think, at times, maybe, like, hard to listen to. Sometimes had a very, like, bright tone, or it wasn't necessarily just trying to be pretty, you know.
Right.
And that's what I love about it, is very dramatic and very in your face. And she also wrote original music and wrote lyrics and things like that. So I love that. Singers who are out now, I mean, there's so many great singers in different kind of styles. Think of somebody like Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, who is, again, somebody I've kind of listened to on and off in different ways and kind of trying to get different things. I think she can also be somebody who explores really dramatic sounds and things like that. So kind of at first it can be something where you're not quite sure, and then maybe after another listen or two, it's like, oh, yeah, I get the kind of artistry
right.
of that. But I really do find myself still feeling like I have so much work to catch up on the classic singers. You know, I'm also really into, like, Shirley Horn and trying to really be listening for the way that these singers I think if I were to identify who my top, you know, five singers are, I think all of them really are musicians first, and that they are either, you know, could be playing the piano and have that kind of instrumental background, or they're just really a part of the band as
mm-hmm.
as an instrument. And maybe not that they're, like, singing wordless lines, but they're very much a part of, like, the interaction and creating something in the moment versus, like, here we're kind of on the front of this group, right? So think of that. And I've really been listening for expression, emotional expression, and lyrical phrasing, and just kind of how those singers make me feel when I listen to them. And that's something that I've really, like, in the last, like, year or so, I think just become so much more aware of my own singing, and that goal, I think probably the number one goal as a singer is to be communicating something to your audience. And a lot of times it doesn't have to be a ballad, but you're singing something that has emotion and that has lyrics. And I always tell my students, like, we have this really, really beautiful thing that we get to sing lyrics, and no other instrument can
right,
do that.
Right.
But what that means is that there's a greater expectation that we better know what we're singing about, and we better be able to communicate that story. So I've just spent so much time really going back and listening to these singers and trying to absorb so much from the way that they're phrasing, the way that they're interacting with their band, and again, the way that they make me feel, and then trying to kind of wrap that all into my own voice with that.
Yeah, well, I remember Frank Sinatra
mm-hmm.
Said of any instrumentalist, they need to know the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Because how can you play
right.
a tune if you don't know what it's about?
Right.
Kind of important,
mm-hmm.
you know. As he has to be one of your influences, too. I mean, as far as phrasing stuff
yeah.
goes, I mean, some of those recordings that he has, especially
mm-hmm.
live at the Sands, I mean,
right.
it's got to be one of the most swingiest recordings
yeah.
I've ever heard. But nobody understands outside of the jazz world that he's actually singing jazz,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it was like one of those things where I'm sure this has happened to you, where somebody comes up, oh, I hate jazz. I don't want to hear that. Well, do you like Frank Sinatra? Oh, my God, I love Frank Sinatra. Well, I got bad news for
right.
you. You do like jazz in some way.
Right.
But I think that there's so many different vocalists outside of even the jazz world that has been influenced by jazz
Absolutely.
Vocalists. So
mm-hmm.
are you specific, like right now you're really focused on the jazz scene? You know, you just had your latest recording was out in 2018,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was like nationally played and charted and all that mm-hmm. stuff. Do you have something else in the hopper that's coming
I
up
do.
Soon?
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
See?
So I'm working on a new project. I've been working with a new trio that features Mike Alamana, Dennis Carroll, and George Flutis. And that's really interesting for me. My last two projects are with an organ group, so it's a
mm-hmm.
very, very different sound to have that kind of more intimate instrumentation.
Yeah, guitar without the organ, that's
yeah.
like...
Yeah, so I'm very excited. There's several original compositions that Dennis has created with some original lyrics of mine. And so I'm excited to add that to my kind of... repertoire.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the other tunes we're exploring are, they're really not like Great American Songbook standards, but more songs that fit this kind of theme. And this project for me is really a reflection on what I would say like my last year and a big moment of kind of personal growth and discovery and going through different changes and kind of transitional moments in my life. So the songs are very much about that. I'd say one of the songs I'm excited about is called Bridges. It's a really beautiful Brazilian piece by Milton Nascimento, and it goes through these bridges that you see out in the world, and then these bridges that you experience in life. So moments of sadness or joy or happiness, but there's still this kind of message of hope that there's love at the end of all of that, and there's still promise for something better. So that's what a lot of those songs are going to be about. So I'm very, very excited. I think this project for me is certainly my most personal that I've ever recorded. And to me, it's feels like my most sophisticated in terms of the lyrical content, the arrangements that we're doing, a lot of the harmony that Dennis has come up with on the originals. So in terms of what I was just talking about, like really digging into those singers, that's really greatly influenced my ability, I think, to be able to express a lyric and to express a story as well.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the three guys you're playing with are like, they've played with everybody in the world, right? And Dennis, I mean, George and Mike as well, but Dennis is one of those guys that is really, I mean, I've known him for a long time, and he's always just, he's trying to give, if he really believes in what you're doing, he's going to give you advice or you know, and add to your project, even if you're playing a one-time gig or anything, because he's like all about the music.
Right.
I mean, I've never been around somebody that is just like, no matter where this guy's playing, he could playing in a restaurant, but he's playing. When you're playing with Dennis, it's like it's on.
Absolutely.
And to have him being able to kind of bounce ideas off of, that has to just immediately, you know, grow your concepts,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, you know, so that's incredible. So when is this getting recorded and put out?
I'm hoping that we're going to be recording it this spring, if I can find time between all the teaching and all the stuff that I'm doing. So I've been looking at studios and kind of trying to make some decisions and kind of get it scheduled. I'm hoping for like March or April to record it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. And we just did a weekend at the Showcase, which is really a nice opportunity. I love playing that room. And it's also a great opportunity to just play that material again and again and really kind of workshop some things. So it's been that was really great timing, and I'm excited to build off of that as well.
So before we wrap anything up, you got back from Shanghai.
Yes.
So let's talk about this.
Because
you said at the beginning that it was kind of like an earth-changing, life-changing situation. So what gig was it, and how did you end up over there? Who were you playing with, and how did it go down?
So I was playing at the Jazz at Lincoln Center Club in Shanghai, and I was there with Richard Johnson's quintet. So it was Richard's gig. He was playing piano. We had Greg Archery on drums, and then Jeremy Betcher on bass, who lives in Wisconsin, and Greg Tardy on saxophone. And it was really, really incredible. It was my first experience doing a residency and also something abroad. I've done a little bit of gigging. I did a festival in Canada, but we were there 6 nights a week for 2.5 weeks. So just the amount of what you can learn musically, but I also think personally, and just so much about performing and things like that. And I really took that opportunity to try a bigger persona and to try some new things. And we also had a lot of music we learned. So each week was a different songbook. We did Betty Carter the first week, the Carmen Sings Monk album, and then Strayhorn and Ellington, and then as well as Richard's original music. So I think before even going over there, I was responsible for about 50 different songs.
Wow.
So in terms of like
That'll
also just like...
expand your thought process.
So in terms of just like really... growing musically as well, is like learning all of that material. And then I think Richard has a really great way of just in the moment deciding to do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of fun and also challenging, but mostly fun in that it really, really required me and all of us to be so focused in the moment to just take things a different way. I mean, we had a set where the audience was just giving us tons of energy, so he decided that we were going to just run it kind of like a show. And we did a 75-minute set without any breaks in between the tunes, so we would finish tune, and then he would start the next intro. And I was like, by the fourth or fifth, you know, I was like, all right, we are not stopping. So by the end of it, I was like, I feel like I was just running for that entire thing. But really beautiful, and another great way, again, of like kind of being ready for that. And then one of my other favorite sets, he decided that I was going to do a duet with everybody on stage. and I didn't really know this until he was announcing it on the microphone. So I did a duet with him, with the bass player, with Greg on drums, and then with Greg on saxophone, which I've never done before, just voice and saxophone.
Yeah.
That was like one of my favorite experiences from that. And again, it being completely different. But instead of being like, no, I can't do that, you just say, okay, I'm going to try that and do it. So that was just really, really incredible in all those ways. And we did tons of shopping. So we got, custum made outfits and all that stuff too. So that was obviously, of course, very, very fun as well to kind of bring all that stuff home.
What were the audiences like?
They were great,
Are they like sold out there, on those nights?
Oh, we had several nights where it was very, very full, and the audiences loved it. I think maybe some of them may be like new to jazz, but people just absolutely loved it. We had one night where people were like screaming after my scat solo. I'm like, this is like the best gig ever. So it went really, really well, and I was just really amazed to be able to do that and to connect with audiences, so far from home is really a beautiful thing.
Well, it's got to be interesting because, you take that experience just being able to connect with an audience in another country.
Right.
And music is the great communicator there, although I'm sure probably everybody pretty much spoke English too. But just that, the culture-wise, but music kind of crosses those borders. But it's probably interesting to you too, at least it would be to me, is that you're just probably watching the reaction of people. Maybe it's a little different there than it is here. Did you notice any of that? Like to some tunes or how they act after a solo or something?
Yeah, I think that there was a large population of people who did speak English, but some who didn't. And I was thinking that kind of after the fact is like every song I sang was in English. So there might certainly have been moments where people didn't know exactly what I was singing on stage. So it's also like trying to communicate something emotionally or energy-wise when they don't know exactly the lyrical content. So I do think like as like a vocalist, I very much find myself also being kind of an educator on stage. So kind of pointing to this person took a solo, so you'll clap for him, or kind of announcing these people and trying to help the audience. I'm always engaging, if I'm not singing, if someone's soloing, engaging my energy towards that to help the audience kind of know this is where we should be focusing our time on. So I think that certainly helped in that kind of situation. They certainly loved high energy things. We had a lot of high energy songs and some different, they just really loved it. I don't know that it was necessarily different, just maybe a little bit more kind of coaching and kind of how to do it. But yeah, they were really great.
Well, awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming in.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's been a blast.
So where can everybody go to find out about all your tour dates and your new recording and all that stuff? Is it AlyssaAllgood.com?
AlyssaAllgood.com, yes.
And of course, Instagram, Facebook.
Yes.
She's all over social media. Every once in a while, her dog appears on there,
too. Yes, very cute.
And, of course, you can see the rest of this issue and read all the articles and listen to all the podcasts at ChicagoJazzMagazine.com and all of our weekly and daily updates on ChicagoJazz.com. And for Alyssa, I really appreciate her being here, and I appreciate you watching. And until next time, hopefully we will see you somewhere out on the scene.